very quiet.
Do you guys ever have a plan?
Recorded live from Stockton, California, this is Jammin' with the Best.
Oh, the voice of Crash.
Crash is like becoming a celebrity around here.
Man, he always was.
Yeah, I mean, he's a celebrity everywhere.
We got another celebrity in here.
We do.
This is, I think, to me, outside of Hogan, which is sitting to his left, the undisputed celebrity and like all-star of the skins matches. We've got Kevin Jones.
K Jones.
Well, thank you guys for having me on, and I wouldn't be known as that if it wasn't for you guys, so huge thanks there.
No worries, dude. Appreciate that. I think that's where like we started to really get to know you a little bit better, as much as you can from just watching videos. It's I think that's what's great about the skins too, is you get to see players in a little bit different light. And I don't know, I love all the shit talking. It's like you and Calvin back and forth is probably my favorite part of any of them.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, mine too. Mine too. The skins matches are amazing because that's the side of us that you get to see. You never get to see that side unless we have our own YouTube channels. It's not like it's the first skins match that you're going to be on, though, that you're going to show everybody your true colors.
Yeah.
It definitely takes a few to kind of just kind of open up and be more yourself. The group that you're playing with is also a big factor in that too. What players are you going to be jabbing against and stuff like that. But it's just like out there playing with our friends, just like we would normally.
Yeah. It was great watching it today. We got to go watch the OTB Open skins match, which was
That was awesome.
It was super fun.
First all-girls skins match.
Yeah.
Pretty sure. Mm-hmm. It's something we've been pushing for a little bit. Sorry you had to take a back seat this week, you and all the other guys.
I got plenty of time to sit back and watch. That's for sure. I've been on plenty. I really appreciate that, though. I love being on them. But I bet this one was really cool. Nice dynamic.
Super fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. They played great.
Not
going
to do no spoilers, but there is a... Yeah, it was Missy.
Is this coming out before?
This will come out tonight.
This will drop
today.
Okay,
cool. Yeah. So no spoilers. Got it.
Yep. Missy, Paige, Katrina, and Own.
Yep. It was, powerhouse force.
It was great.
Straight up.
It was awesome.
Showing them what's up on that course. Give us your thoughts on the course.
I think the course that we're playing this weekend at the OTB Open is awesome. There's not many other words other than just like long, challenging, and then I just like to say it's a great test for the best of the best out there.
That's perfect. I mean, I think that's ideally what Leonard was looking for when he designed it. Obviously, we've got the best in the world coming through. We want to give them a test that's, you know, fair, but fun and challenging.
Yeah.
And just see who comes out on top.
Yeah. I'm not going to go out on record publicly saying that Leonard is my favorite course designer, but he is way up there.
Yeah.
He's really smart disc golf wise. He also seems to take other people's opinions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dude, he's great with that. He gets so much input. Like he had Aaron and I go out 3 or 4 times. I'm messaging him back and forth. He's got Google spreadsheets, Google Docs, like map layovers. I'll show you this after, and maybe we will even put something up if Leonard's all right with it. Just the overview of the map and how many fucking lines he has over all of it is just a million. And then it all goes down to like what his layout actually is. And then he refines it and he draws bubbles as far as like landing zones or if you start to spray it, like where's it going to land? And just everything is thought out again and again and again and again.
Well, yeah.
Whether you like his courses or not, like nobody can say like there's nobody more thorough than him. And like and he can explain why like to a T, like this is why I did this.
Yeah.
Like the basket is 2 feet left of this tree because I think some hyzers are going to come in and this tree is going to block that. Now I'm going to make you get a 30 footer to putt. So
that is really important for a course designer to do. And that's just effort, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. He takes it like it's his job.
And it is to some extent. So. Yeah. Wait. We knew the course was in good hands with him.
Yeah. And it shows for sure. And as Glen Eagles as well, Glen Eagles was a phenomenal, fun course to play on tour.
Yeah, I love Glen Eagles. That's like my favorite course in California.
I know. When people ask me my favorite course, for some reason, that one doesn't come to mind, but it is. It's the top. It's top five for me easily.
It's amazing. Like how do you get a better hole than hole five?
Shoot, man.
Yeah. No,
five is nasty. Insane.
I don't understand. Like, and then that six right after that, it's like.
Six was so tough.
Great addition to the course. Is whole
and
six.
Then another one that's on a ball golf course, but doesn't traditionally like have that ball golf course feel where it's wide open bombs. It's making you hit some lines. You know, hole six, I think, is perfect for that.
Mm-hmm.
And in this course, maybe even a little more so as far as some of the lines, the property that they're blessed with there is unlike any other.
Yeah, we went from extremely hilly to very flat.
Right.
From San Francisco
to
here.
That's true. So. Yeah, dude, it's so flat. Some of the, like, the flyovers, the drone little flyovers, it's just flat.
Just flat. Nothing.
It's crazy.
Hella trees, though. That's what Luke keeps bringing up. How many trees are here? And I guess I don't notice it that much.
Yeah.
But he keeps telling me, dude, there's so many trees here. I think he even told me how many trees there were.
It's all his Stockton research.
Yeah, dude. Luke's done so much research on Stockton. It's crazy.
Really?
Yeah. Like, we were on the podcast the other day, and now he's like, yeah, Stockton, city of 309,000.
just Wikipedia and,
like,
on your
just
ass.
Started, like, throwing down Stockton facts. I'm like, fuck, I don't even know most of this.
Dude, those are the kinds of friends you want to have around, though.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Just be passing on facts to you, learning stuff constantly.
Mm-hmm. Looks cool as fuck.
Yeah, he's easily my best friend out there.
Yeah.
On tour.
He's great.
That's a good choice.
Yeah.
So I was wondering this last night, like, what are different tour stops like outside of the course? What's the atmosphere like when you're chilling? Is it usually just you're hanging out at the Airbnb with, like, your tight-knit crew? I mean, I guess basically what's the atmosphere like? Last night, you know, we had some people around and it was a good time.
Mm-hmm. I like to say that it's kind of like a lunch, like your cafeteria lunchtime. Whenever you go out to the course, you kind of see these certain people at their certain lunch tables for the most part.
Okay.
Stays semi-consistent with who you're hanging out with. But at the same time, we can all play with each other. We could all join tables or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody gets along with everybody when it comes down to it. Now, when we're on the course, that is a different talk. People don't get along with everybody on the course. But as disc golfers off the course, everybody is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's so funny how true that is, and there's kind of this breakdown of on the course, I like this guy, I like this girl, off the course, different things, where it is pretty chill. Everybody off the course is like seems to get along really well. On the course, like, you're working, it's a different it's a different beast.
Exactly. We're just different people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like we leave our business there on the course, and then off the course, it's almost all forgotten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like. It was so fun. Like, this whole week so far, just seeing everyone mingle and get to know some people. Like, you've been kicking around the shop a little bit, so mm-hmm. I've gotten to know you a little bit this past week, and it's like, damn, everyone's just so cool.
Yeah.
Everyone's basically who they are when you see them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was telling Paige that earlier. Like, it's not a surprise that any individual that we meet is super cool, down to earth. It's, you know, it's never a surprise, like, oh, a disc golfer's cool. But it's nice to actually see it all in person with people like Emerson rolling through, like yourself, you know, Thomas Gilbert, just random different names that we know but we've never met roll through, and you get to know them a little bit, and it's like everyone leaves. It's like, damn, they're cool as fuck.
Yeah. Talking to Simon and Big Germ and Eagle last night.
Yeah.
Super cool. Chill people.
Yeah. And, hey, you guys are really cool, too.
Oh, thank you. Thanks,
just
man.
A bunch of cool dudes.
A bunch of cool dudes hanging out.
I mean, you guys are really inviting. You've invited us all into your work. This week you've got lunch and dinner that you've been feeding a lot of people just to be nice and, like, just to give people nice, comforting home feeling.
Yeah,
that's exactly what we look for out on tour. We look to have that home feeling because it's hard to come by.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's what we wanted. We want people to end up leaving this event, you know, hopefully with a bunch of cash in their pocket because they played like studs and just feeling like they had a good time and that they were welcome and that, you know, it's a spot that if we're lucky enough to have it again, that they're looking forward to.
Yeah.
So that's sweet. To take it back, like, give us a little bit of intro into how you got into disc golf and what you were, like, doing at the time.
Cool. So I found disc golf when I was 12 years old at church camp.
Okay.
I went to this church camp a few summers in a row, and they had 9 disc golf holes on their property, old, like, Mach 3 style baskets or so. And then they had a shed full of discs. And when I saw the baskets out there, I was immediately intrigued by it because I had played ball golf before, and I'm huge into sports, very competitive, and for some reason I was just immediately attracted to the sport. And so I asked somebody to show me around the course and show me what's up. And the guy who knew what was up, he ended up doing that. He took me into the shed that they have all these discs in. There was probably like 200 or so just used discs in there. And at that moment, you're hooked.
Yep.
You're getting these discs that are all different colors, different shapes, different pictures on them. I mean, at the time, that was pretty cool.
Huge, yeah.
Yeah. So you have it just immediately hooked me into the sport. And I could immediately sling the disc sidearm a little bit, get some nice like S curve out of it. And from then on, I was just playing all the time. Soon after the church camp, we went to Academy with my dad because my birthday's in July. So we went and got me some discs for my birthday. I ended up getting an Arobi Epic.
Oh, there you go.
Because it's what disc is cooler looking than that.
Yeah. What a unique like first disc to be your own.
Dude, I know, and not a good idea either, but it didn't take me long to realize that wasn't what I needed.
Yeah.
At that same day, we ended up buying a QLS or some kind of
Millennium
disc, and after just messing around with the Arobi, I finally switched over to that, and I could really get some good distance out of it. I was probably throwing it like 300 feet sidearm or something.
Damn.
So that's a guess, but... I specifically remember this shot on my course that we played back then that I just slinged it through the woods, probably like 280, 300 or something, and found the leagues near after that.
Mm-hmm.
They actually installed a course right by where I lived, so I didn't have to drive 25 minutes to play. I could drive 2 minutes and play.
Dude, that's huge. Perfect. Yeah.
It was ginormous, and ended up finding the leagues out there on a Sunday with a few people that I'd love to mention. Matt Lloyd, Ponytail Tony, John McGowan, and Roger Knight.
Nice.
And those were the guys that I played with in the league, and that is when you start to see what's possible in this game. Because before then, I'm just slinging Frisbees around the woods and no idea what the shots are supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. And then I just saw these guys jamming putts. Like, I'm trying to, like, kind of like hyzer or who knows what to get the disc in the basket. These guys are flat jamming putts into the pole, and so I changed my putt and kind of got this little stabby quick spin putt that you see a lot of kids kind of lean towards because it's the easiest way to generate momentum into the disc. I started playing some tournaments after that, and just kind of moved up divisions after as much as I could. Once I won one, I would end up moving up.
Yep.
We would travel as far as 2.5 hours to play. So that would mean we'd go to Little Rock, Arkansas, or we'd go to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and maybe Fayetteville, Arkansas, and that's about it. So I'd travel around there.
You're how old at this point?
I'm 13 and 14 at this point.
Yeah, so got the bug quick.
Super quick. Super quick. And at that point, I'm just in junior high little school as well, so I don't have many obligations. I don't have practice to go to after school, so I've got a lot of free time. Once I got into high school, that was a totally different story. Kind of stopped playing, actually.
Yeah.
Totally stopped playing disc golf in high school. And
it can happen, man.
Easily, because, I mean, high school, there's just so many other things on your mind. At the time, disc golf doesn't even come close to looking like a career.
Yeah, so, like, what year is this?
This is 2014.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It's going to be earlier than that. Sorry.
Yeah.
This is 2010 and 11 when I was really like playing a bunch of amateur tournaments. But at the same time, I was telling everybody this is just a hobby. If something were to happen, that'd be crazy cool. But I had no expectations of disc golf being a job by then. Because
so much growth in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can still kind of see it, but you can see the growth without a doubt. The growth is insane. But the money is what's hidden.
Yeah.
That's what you can't see. And that's what parents want to see. They want to see Paul McBeth, $10 million contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They want to see not only Paul McBeth, though. They want to see, like, Kevin Jones, million-dollar contract.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, like, it's to that point, it's a question that I had for, like, later on. But we'll jump ahead and then get back because I'd love to hear more of the background. But, like, player contracts and them being public is something that we've talked about a lot. And even agent representation is something we've not only just looked into, But you know, want to talk about, I think that there's so much value on the player's side to be public about their contract, but it's also like money's something that's kind of taboo to talk about, whether it's, you know, making a lot of money or not making enough. It's not something that people are very open about. So not that you necessarily have to say anything, but what do you think about those contracts being a little bit more public on a grand scale?
Yeah, I truly think both ways, and I truly think that I don't know which way that I would prefer it to be, because if everybody knows what contracts are, it's possible that companies are going to lower their general contract ideas because they want to be fair. They want to give everybody a chance, and they can't just like give $1 million to this guy and then this guy loses one time to Joe and Joe like all of a sudden feels like he earned
Joe's
that.
The man now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got to renegotiate.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then the other side of it is with not seeing public contracts, you have the opportunity to get an agent and sneak yourself in a sick deal.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, I guess, and players talk, you know, so I'm sure to some extent, I'm guessing that that players talk, at least with your close friends, you know, you're going, what should I, like, it's an off season for you. Like, you signed with Prodigy 2 years back?
2019.
Your second season?
Yeah.
Third season with them?
This is my third and final season of this contract.
Yeah, so I mean, going into the next off season, you're going to be, you know, in our eyes, like one of the top players that should be getting paid. And so I no doubt you're going to be asking around and going like, what's my value? It's got to be something that you're asking yourself. And so you're probably feeling out a little bit, you know, certainly guys like Perkins are, you know, good resources to talk to and say, you know, what is it that I should be asking? And no doubt you're having talks with Prodigy, or you're at least kind of brainstorming, you know, how those things might go.
Yeah, it would be foolish of me to not talk to all the companies at the end, or not even at the end of this year, but
leading into it. Sure. Yeah. I mean, you look at like the easiest comparison for us is traditional golf, and you've got like a Tiger Woods and a Nike, and you've got your club, you know, sponsorship, and you've got your ball sponsorship, you've got your apparel sponsorship, and you have maybe even, you know, something outside of that, where I think of like a Phil Mickelson with KPMG. You know, you've got all these different, you know, little sponsors. I feel like, and I could be wrong on this, that most of those are pretty public. And I think it's a good benchmark. They are. Like to argue your point from earlier, I think that it would only help the player.
Yeah,
I might be naive in that, but I think that it all being public would only help the player in the sense that they go, oh, this guy or girl's like actually getting this amount.
Yeah.
And I've got, you know, clearly better stats or comparable or close to, like, I'm not getting that. I feel like I should be getting that. And maybe this, you know, this other company is willing to do that, or one of the other, you know, manufacturers is actually looking to, you know, match that.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of validity in that point.
Setting the market. It happens in like baseball all the time.
Yeah.
You wait for one domino to fall. And then when that, like the big fish signs, everyone else is like, okay, this guy's worth this much compared to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if everyone was public with their things, the people that aren't making very much can now be like, hey, I'm that good. This is how good I am. And I don't think they would drop down the other person. They would just raise it up, especially with more money coming into the sport.
Yeah.
There's a lot more money.
There's a lot of dynamics going on right now. Obviously supply and demand is one that's, you know, been more off in this last 12 months than in any other time in our sport, which is, you know, a great thing in a sense because it shows a lot of growth. And certainly it's been a very weird past 15 months for the entire globe. But, man, players are selling discs is basically my bottom line. Somebody wants a K. Jones M3. You know, somebody wants a K. Jones A3. They're going to buy that over just a stock A3. Or maybe they're going to go find a stock A3 just because you're throwing it. You know what I mean? Like, players move plastic.
Yep.
We see it. We've got the data.
Yeah, names. If there's a name attached to a disc, it sells.
Dude, Prodigy took a big uptick when it was you and Seppo just rolling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like at the beginning of that year,
sure.
Prodigy saw a huge uptick, at least on our end. I know they had to have seen it at their warehouse too. I think
that's really cool to hear.
Yeah.
I think it's true as well. We were, especially like in the California area as well. California, it was kind of dead with Prodigy. There was not much going around. And Seppo and I did. We rolled through. We played Goat Hill and multiple other California events. We met fans. And we, we immediately saw that at least California sales were increasing, which is awesome to see. You're right, though. The players do sell the discs. There's no reason for the manufacturers not to just be pushing out signature lines on signature lines. They're going to go.
Dude, if we were manufacturer, I know we would be very bullish on player contracts.
Yeah.
Like, was talking to Eagle about it a little bit yesterday off air, and I was like, I'm not going to ask you any numbers or anything. I just hope you're getting paid, dude. Yep. You know, and he said what he said, and we had, you know, a good conversation. I'm not going to say at all what he said, but, like, I just was, dude, I really hope that you're well compensated, just, you know, man to man. Like, I hope you're getting paid well.
We both personally think Paul's contract is way undervalued.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like,
certainly no for doubt. The length.
Like, the length, it should be fucking $60 million.
Mahomes is underpaid, at least. Man. Like, Mahomes is underpaid at $500 million. He's underpaid. Yeah. And it's only in the latter, like, you know, 5 years of his contract where you'll really see it or feel it, where the other quarterbacks will be paid higher than him. 6 years down the line, it's hard not to say that he's, you know, not going to be in the competition for still top QBs in the league.
For sure.
But I'm sure he's stoked to, you know, sign that contract for $500 million. Yeah. So I don't think he's hurting in the slightest.
No, you're not hurting when you sign for that much.
Our man might be underpaid.
No, but he does receive some negative feedback for that contract.
Paul?
Yeah. Mahomes.
Oh, Mahomes, Paul. Okay. I mean, yeah.
I thought you meant, Patty. We're on first name basis.
No, Paul, no. Paul is absolutely undervalued at that $10 million contract, but in the same sense, he's securing himself a lifelong, like, career with ease. He's really good with his money as well.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
dude, and the foundation, the Paul Macbeth Foundation.
Yeah.
If I get a chance to, like, bend his ear, I'm going to ask if there's anything we can do to help, because we would love to support that.
Yeah. He's doing good things. I mean,
absolutely, dude. Like, it's nothing but respect, obviously, from
superstar
from our end. And I think that, you know, back to your original point of, you know, the 10-year, $10 million made a splash. Like, that so many different news outlets covered that. And so that's huge. I think Paul, so many times, to the benefit of the sport, has thought about the sport as a whole and his impact and his benefit to the sport as a whole more than the benefit to self.
Yeah, I think so too.
Dude, that move to Discraft, I think, is one of the biggest things that ever happened to disc golf.
Yep.
So legendary.
Like, it drove the game to a new place. Like, if he just stayed with Innova that year, like, we don't pop off as OTB because, like, we moved into the new shop right when Paul signed with Discraft. And we're like, oh.
Yeah, I went full-time, like, 3 months before that. Of course, not knowing, you know, no inside info. at that time, that was just really lucky and well-timed there. But, and it's nothing, you know, against Innova. It could have been moving from Discraft to Innova. It was the fact that he moved.
Yeah. Well, it was just that time. Yeah. It was just that time. He had, like, I guess, lost leverage with Innova. It's like, this is what we can pay you. And then Discraft saw that opportunity and then cashed in.
All over it.
But not to disregard the fact that Paul had an extremely successful first season to make it. Like that was the... If Paul would have been shut down that season, who knows? Mm-hmm. It could have been a little different.
Yeah, for sure.
It could have been a big plus for Innova. It's like, well, you're not as good without our discs.
But it did not turn into that, which is so sick. And, I mean, I tried everything I could. That world's to, I was telling myself, we can't let Paul win this. Like, he's about to shake crap up. This is going to be massive if he wins this Worlds. And
start naming all his discs with 5 letters instead of 4.
Yeah, for real. That's funny. So we'll circle back a little bit as far as you getting into kind of the tournament scene, and then you took your break, but I guess kind of bridge the gap between getting into tournaments and then deciding to go on tour.
Yeah, that's a huge gap there. So playing these amateur tournaments, I played through 2010 to 2012. That was when I got into high school. So high school took me out of the game, made me totally forget the game. I was actually disappointed in the game because I got out of it and never heard anything about it.
Interesting.
Never heard a thing about it. Not on social media, not on anything. It was like disc golf didn't even exist anymore. Mm. So I was like super disappointed in the game for not growing at the pace that I thought it deserved to grow at or it would grow at. And then I get into college. I'm playing football. So I go there for summer workouts. We have 2-hour workout in the summer day, and I have no school. So no friends, no nothing. Here I go, back to the course to play disc golf because what else would I do?
Yep.
So I go play disc golf, start getting immediately kind of picked back up. Like, I have this insane snap at this point. Like, because
last time out I every threw
the disc. Yep. Yeah. Last time I threw the disc, I was 15. Mm-hmm. Now I'm throwing it at 19 with all these football workouts and all these everything under my belt now. I was crushing the disc.
Yeah.
Just needed to, like, dial in the game, figure out how to putt again. And that was what my years through 2015 to 2017 were doing, was me in school and playing a little bit of football as well. I played the first year of football, and then I just focused on disc golf almost entirely.
And so what were you doing to improve your game?
Well, I was playing every day, first of all, playing every day, playing as many tournaments as I possibly could. And that's about it. I mean, I was just working on my weaknesses.
Yeah.
When it comes down to it, I'm really good at assessing myself, seeing what I need to be working on, what am I bad at, what am I good at, and then balancing all that out. I'm really good at that. That's one of the reasons that I've had as much success as I have, because I'm always working on what I suck at.
Yeah.
So this year I've been working on ripping fairway drivers, and I'm almost at the point where it's like my bread and butter. Nice. So let's go.
Sick.
Yeah, turn that weakness into a strength.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so then you made the decision to go on tour. What was that process like? What was going through your mind? What were your alternatives? How'd your family feel about it?
Sure. So I have such a fortunate situation leading me to the tour. I remember having this round in Tulsa at Blackhawk Disc Golf Course, except we played the White Hawk layout, which means the short tees. It's a really challenging wooded course, but on the white tees, you could shred it because they're all reachable, blah, blah, blah. I end up shooting a 15 under or something at that course, which was just dumb. Like, this was a C tier. It was rated 1067. One of my better rounds of all time. Two dead center spits in the round, too. Like, it was like from inside the circle. It's just one of those days. And Pro Discus saw that I had that day. And Pro Discus, meaning a representative of Pro Discus, happened to be from Arkansas, and he was in charge of the Pro Discus RV, making sure that somebody was driving and around the tour, getting Pro Discus some exposure, and they didn't have anybody yet. And Baker Helton from Arkansas saw me as a huge prospect for that, and so he reached out to me and offered me the RV to travel in. And initially, being given an RV wasn't quite enough for me. And so I asked for gas. I pretty much said, hey, if you get the gas paid in this RV, I'm in. And so
that's kind of funny. Like, just an RV and you're like, damn, that's going to be a big ass expense. Like, this isn't the cheapest vehicle to drive around.
Dude, we're talking $20,000 a year for gas, like crazy numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up getting it worked out to where I could run events for Pro Discus, two disc challenges, get the gas paid off, and then do the tour. And then that was 2017. There's so many little innuendos or like little parts of the story that are easy to forget. Like, they reached out to me initially in January at the beginning of the year for a whole year of touring, but I had already purchased a ticket to Nicaragua for 4 months. To teach English and better my Spanish, because that was what I was planning on being at the time, was a Spanish teacher. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to be like some gringo Spanish teacher that has no accent and barely can get through the class. Like, I wanted to be high level.
Immerse yourself.
Exactly. And so that's what I did. And then Pro Discus hits me up and they're like, hey, we want you to do the disc golf tour.
Yeah.
We'll pay the gas. And I'm like, my gosh, I already got this ticket. I'm going to do it. Can I come back in July and do the second half, though? And they said, that's not a problem. And
nice.
Came back, played a couple B tiers, and then Ledgestone was my first big event. Totally sucked. Got like eight in second place at that course. Anybody who's played the tournament knows how easy that can happen.
Yeah.
And that was a huge fire set inside of me right there.
Nice.
Getting revenge on that course, getting revenge at Idlewild. Mm-hmm. Those were two that were just on my list from then on. And Idlewild, I ended up almost winning the next year and then winning the year after.
Hell yeah.
I remember that.
So, like, that was, like, a huge demon for me, was that Idlewild course, because it's so challenging. And I just felt, for some reason, I just felt like I had it.
Yeah.
And I proved that I did in years to come after. But ended up showing out in 2017 at USDGC.
Yep.
Final round, or I'm not sorry, I'm sorry, second round.
Yeah, yeah.
Second
yeah.
round, and that was all it takes for people to start recognizing you on the course.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
For one, sure. One show or one showing on Jomez, especially at a major, and then all of a sudden everybody's seen you before. You feel like a pro. You feel like you belong. You feel like you can do it.
Yep.
And yeah, that was the beginning.
And you keep doing it. So
yeah, no doubt. So what was that off season like?
That off season was pretty good. I ended up renegotiating with Pro Discus. Ended up getting a monthly salary. In my second year playing, just from showing potential, just because they believed in me.
That's awesome.
And played a whole year, and a whole nother year under Pro Discus
mm-hmm.
after that.
So where does your tour with Austin Hannum fit in this timeline? Because I know that was the other huge Pro Discus name.
Yeah, that fits in when I re-signed.
Okay.
When I re-signed with Pro Discus, I threw out Austin's name because I thought he was – really consistent. At the time, he never had like bad rounds. He okay. would always be right around 10-10, just like averaging super solid rounds because he was like pretty smart golfer, very level-headed. And so I reached out to Pro Discus trying to get him hooked up there, and we ended up doing it. I did the RV with him for the first half of the year, and then I hopped out and drove my car alongside the RV so nice. That we both had like a little more space. We could park the RV and then drive to the course.
That's how that helps, man.
Yeah.
A little more freedom. I think of like, we were just talking about Emerson where he's towing that car, you know, just gives you a little bit more freedom once you're at the stop.
Yeah. A lot more freedom. It's nice to not have to move an RV to the course. If you have an RV, you got to know exactly where you're going.
Yeah.
So I've heard you've driven in every car, basically.
Pretty like, much, man.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and you mm-hmm. and the van's the best.
Yeah, that's what I tell everybody. I've done my car for touring. I've done the Pro Discus RV, and then last year I traveled in a truck and a camper, which was great.
Okay. Yep.
But I like to travel alone. I'm a really independent person. I love to hang out with people, but at the same time, I need my own space when it comes down to it. Mm-hmm. And so, the van is just becoming the perfect thing for me. I'm able to have all my stuff on me. It's like having your room on you at the course.
Yeah, it's sick.
Yeah. You walk to the tee box, you realize you forgot something. Okay, well, it's going to be house is in there. Your van. Yeah.
That's I can imagine that there is some, like, very obvious perks of traveling with somebody. And then certainly with the RV, too, you know, you got a little bit more room, more luxury. But, yeah, just that freedom and to be able to, you want to bounce to Yosemite, you want to head up to Redding. Just, you know, the word I keep going back to is freedom, and just the, you know, the knowledge of whatever, wherever you want to go and whatever you want to do, you have that ability. If you want to take a tour stop off, you don't have to talk with someone about it. Just like, you know what, I'm going to go up to Portland on my own time. I'm going to skip Masters Cup or whatever it might be, you know?
Yeah. And you take lodging and everything out of the equation, even campgrounds with the van, you're able to take out of the equation. With the RV and the camper, it's a little more difficult. You got to be in more populated places.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise somebody will come by and be like, why are you here? Get out of here. But the van, it's like nobody even notices it.
It looks like a work van or something.
Yep.
It does. Yeah. That's what, and I'm going to keep it that way.
Yeah. All the white.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something to that too. Not having your face plastered on the side. Yeah, that's cool, man. Living the dream, dude.
100%.
Love it. So what was the off season after that? Like, talk to us a little bit about the move to Prodigy, and then your time with Seppo.
Yeah, so my move to we're now talking late 2018. I had a really successful season in 2018. Let's see here. I won many A tiers. I don't think I had one. I didn't win a pro tour yet, but I was in the running at a few of them. I was getting really close, and so that was the time when I reached out to all the companies out there, making sure that I had surveyed all my options. I reached out to Innova, Discraft, MVP, like you name it. I talked to the company to see what my options were with a sponsorship. I was about to accept an offer from Discraft that I was happy with, and I had somebody come to me as an agent and pretty much tell me that I was worth way, way more than what I was about to accept,
mm-hmm.
and made me second. He made me second guess what I was about to accept. And I gave this guy a chance, and he ended up negotiating me a way better contract with Prodigy.
Good for you.
And it was the best decision that I ever made.
Hell yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, and, you know, again, like, it's one of those things that in other sports that have had the money in them for a lot longer, it's not something that the player is expected to navigate on their own. But in our sport, still in its infancy in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. it's something that players are, you know, doing on their own. It's just a lot of emails and phone calls back and forth with a contact at, you know, different manufacturers, and then talking a little bit with your friends, and it's still sort of in that spot.
Didn't like Innova or something have a thing where, like, we only would talk to the player to sign? Like, they wouldn't even talk to agents?
Yeah.
I definitely have heard that.
Yeah. I don't know if it was Innova or not, but it was a long time ago, and it was some older companies. So.
I mean, I think at some extent that's how all of them probably start, and maybe they're one of the last to come along, if that is who it is and if that's still the case. But that's how I think every league and, you know, organizations have started. Like the NFL, it's something I've been reading up on a lot, and shout out to my mom. She's been doing a lot of reading on it too. She's our lawyer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Like, that's how the NFL was for a long, long time, mm-hmm. is we don't deal with agents. We're not going to deal with agents. And, like, here we are, 2020. Like, you're not dealing with players. You know what I mean?
Not
you're
at all.
Only dealing with agents.
And you have to be, like, a certified agent that goes to, like, the NFL school. And the NBA just got rid of that rule because of Rich Paul, LeBron's friend.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a degree. And there used to be a rule you couldn't be an agent if you didn't have a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And basically LeBron and Rich Paul changed that. Now you don't need a degree.
Yeah, that's what's so funky about an agent, though, is it's just a person. It's just a person that knows your value, knows the market value.
Yep. And knows how to negotiate and talk and use leverage. And
Or you look at, like, Rick this year, I think, is one of the ones that's kind of making waves in the sense of, like, having a manager and having even, like, a nutritionist and all these different things. And I think what it's doing at a macro scale is just taking things off of his plate. You know what I mean? It's like, dude, just go be the best golfer that you can be. And the more that people are able to focus on that, talked with Paige a little bit about that too, where I'd like she's starting to, you know, hire different people that are going to do this and that for her just to help her focus on things. Like, that's huge. But obviously what that takes is a budget. You know, people aren't going to do that for free, and nor should they. But it's something that as you're getting paid more and more, you have a little bit more freedom to say, let me take this off my plate. You know, whatever it might be, not saying like go hire an agent or anything like that. But, you know, to just be able to focus, I think would be huge. I don't know if it's something that, you know, where you're seeing, you know, a little bit of a ripple effect in that, or it's something that you've, you know, thought about. Or if you're just like, I feel like I got things, you know, pretty handled, like I'm chill at this point, but it's nice to see the transition, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely on that track. I mean, I'm far from chilling, but I'm well on the track. Like, there's so many jobs that us players have to do ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, somebody who's maybe smarter than me could go off and just name six jobs, like accounting,
social media
Social media. Yeah, they're
logistics, like all these different things.
Yes.
The better you are, the more
training,
people
physical therapy.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. The more people are going to want, you know, like I'm sure you've seen the more events you're winning, the higher your rating goes, the more you're getting asked to do press conferences, to do all these different things. There's so many different things you need to line up. And Prodigy probably is like, hey, you need to be doing, you know, this amount of social media. I have no idea if they're like that, but like, certainly manufacturers want to be represented. Social media is a huge vehicle for that exposure and part of how they reap, you know, the benefits of having you throw their stuff other than just being a stud and, you know, smashing jump putts from fucking Circle 8 with PA3s, you know.
That's the job, though.
Yeah.
That is the job.
It is, you know, and there's facets to it. But I guess basically my bottom line is I'm just excited that players are able to have the freedom to delegate a little bit more. And you're going to see, you know, the level step up just a little bit more, too. And life get better, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, there's just so many jobs that you guys were just mentioning there and some that us players do all are on our own that you could delegate most of those jobs to a full-time employee.
Dude, video editing.
Yeah.
Yeah, big time.
It's insane. It truly is. Like how busy we are week in, week out. It's something else. And then if you go up and you like you win a tournament, your next week is going to be full. Crazier. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like full as unreachable, unachievable.
Then you got a bunch of hooligans like us being like, hey, you want to hop on some microphones?
And no talk? Doubt. Look at it like, you know, think about it. This is probably the pinnacle of it. But like after you win the Super Bowl, you're going to run through the whole circuit. You're hitting Jay Leno. You're hitting Fallon. Like all these different things. You got to be on Dan Patrick. You got to be on Pat McAfee's show where you're fucking smoking weed all the time.
Goddamn like, vitamins.
Yeah. Like it's, you know, yeah, it, right to your point. Your schedule is full up with non-disc golf things. And those are something you can't quite delegate, but at least lining it up.
And you got to be a full-time driver.
Yeah, for real.
You're like didn't a cross-country driving. Trucker.
Full-time driver, straight up. Yeah. Ricky is a great example of what to do, though.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing a really good job.
Dude, he's killing it.
Yeah.
I'm so stoked for that guy. Watching him, like, it's kind of a comeback in, like, a weird way.
Sure.
Like, with Lyme disease and all that. Like, this, like, bounce back to the top. Because he's, I don't know, he's playing better than anyone in the world this year.
Oh, yeah.
Like.
He seems happy. He seems healthy, too.
Yeah, he's really healthy.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, he's got the death in the family, which just feeling for him so hard these past few weeks. But, you know, outside of that, happy and healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one of those guys that's all or nothing. If he's going to go on a diet, it's not going to be like, there's not going to be no excuses or like kind of, what do they call breaks when you don't?
Yeah.
Cheat days.
Thank you. Yeah, there's no cheat days for Rick because the way he sees it is he can't have a single drop of sugar in him.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the way he's going to keep it. And that's the way he's been keeping it for a year now almost.
Yeah. That's about right.
Dude, he looks in fantastic shape right now too.
Yeah, he looks good.
That he looks putt's really good. Coming out crisp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks pretty easy.
It looks real easy. Like, he's not even trying.
So, what's next? What's next for KJ?
My website actually is coming out May 31st.
We talked a little bit about this the other day.
That's right. It's going to be kevinjonesdg.com.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have coffee. I'll have multiple blends of coffee available.
Sweet.
I will have discs. I want to say that they're going to be consistently and fully stocked. That's what I've been told from Prodigy is that we're going to not run out of stock on my website. So that would be...
Dude, that is a lot of discs. I don't know that is feasible. I'm not calling Prodigy liars. There is demand. Right, like we were talking about earlier, there's demand for some Kevin Jones discs.
Yeah, so keep an eye out for the Kevin Jones website.
KevinJonesDG.com, dropping at the end of this month.
That's right.
That's cool.
And go check out his latest YouTube video.
Yeah, definitely.
A couple stars from OTB in there.
That's right.
Yeah. You haven't seen actually, we play this awesome course in their warehouse. 9 holes, 2 baskets, special rules.
Yeah.
It's pretty genius. What you can guarantee is something crazy is going to happen.
Yeah, one of the best shots I've ever seen Kev threw on it. Like chicken wing upside down off the wall in the basket.
Nice.
And then last night you losing the tournament by lacing a 300-foot I mean, pretty much 300 feet.
Yeah, it's I don't know like how far it is. But
through a warehouse.
Through a warehouse.
Through 2 doors. Through under, the back door and
under
the front
two
door.
Mandos.
Yeah, big back door, very small front door.
Out the front door into the middle of the street.
Yeah.
Choked.
Kind of. Should have just laid up.
And then you missed the door again.
Yeah, then I missed the door coming back in. And I lost by a stroke.
Yeah.
Damn.
That's how it goes.
Thank you very much, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
It was great.
One last question before you go. It'll be a quick one. Is do you have a nickname that you like or don't like? We've heard KJ USA, K Jones, just KJ. Is there one that you prefer or maybe even like one you had growing up?
Prefer? No, not at all. Cool. I love just people saying my name, Kevin or KJ, KJ USA, like anything that represents me and my brand is
great.
More than okay. Yeah. And I really enjoy hearing it out there. KJ USA.
Yeah.
Out on the course. It's awesome.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's like, I don't care what you call me. Just call me, man.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Awesome, dude.
Yep. Thank you very much, dude. You're welcome here anytime.
Absolutely. Appreciate y'all, Aaron and Danny. Yep. Thank you.
Yep. Our doors are open. Yep. Right on. Good luck this weekend, too, man.
Thank you.